Judging by how marketers are evaluating their own ability to implement marketing automation tools, they seem to be in need of sound tips from a field expert. Omnichannel marketing automation brings superior added value to retail and business and consumer businesses, especially regarding marketing and sales alignment. Even though it has been around for a while now, we ask ourselves whether marketers are using these tools to the full. To find out, we have perused the 2021 survey conducted by marketing research company Ascend2, and above all, we have asked Megan Hochstetler, Global Senior Marketing Manager at Emarsys, to share best practices with our readers. Good morning, this is Jan Govinek, you're listening to the Visionary Marketing Podcast. Today's topic, marketing automation tips and key lessons from successful implementations with Megan Hochstetler from Emarsys. Disclosure, Emarsys is our client. Marketing automation has become a staple of marketing and sales alignment, and most businesses are using it. Ascend2 Status of Marketing Automation report is clear about this. The marketing research company interviewed 300 marketing professionals in 2021, and it found out that a whopping 84% of respondents thought that their marketing automation efforts were successful to an extent. The devil is in the details, though. To an extent is a rather tale-telling expression. Indeed, digging a little deeper, one finds some room for improvement in the way that businesses are using marketing automation, with no more than 20% of respondents who state that they master the tools properly. So, what of marketing automation in 2022 and how to improve one's results? Megan Hochstetler, Global Senior Product Marketing Manager at Emarsys, shared her secrets with us and our readers. Here is our interview. So I'm here with Megan Hochstetler. Hi, Megan. You're talking from Indianapolis and you're Senior Product Marketing Manager with Emarsys. And we're going to talk about marketing automation.
It's my favorite topic.
Absolutely, absolutely. What is the main purpose exactly of a marketing automation tool, and what can we expect from its implementation?
I think I've seen marketing automation have 1,000 different definitions, a lot of buzzwords in there. But if I were to just narrow it down, really what it's doing is helping marketers to just run multiple campaigns across multiple channels with less hands-on execution. So do more with less. And I mean, a lot of the times marketers have a calendar of some sort, right? To be able to map out where their campaigns are going to land in each time of the year. But they're also doing evergreen campaigns that are going to be continuous throughout the year. Things like transactional messages, things like password resets, or also things like birthday emails that are going to be happening all throughout the year, welcome campaigns to welcome a new customer to your brand. So it's really about scaling your efforts across each of these types of campaigns that are going to be throughout the year for a marketer.
Okay, that's very clear. Now, these marketing automation platforms, are they for every kind of client, or are they rather for B2C or B2B, or is there a preferred kind of customer?
B2C is the biggest marketing automation, but there's also a B2B use case. They're kind of different worlds. My background and kind of sweet spot is more on the B2C angle of it, messaging to consumers. But if you think about the B2B side of the house, they also need automation. And a lot of what they're dealing with is understanding who their leads are that are coming in, when are they hot? They kind of term it as a hot leads at a more of an account-based level versus an individual consumer level. So they kind of have different definitions of it, but it's the same concept, right? But different markets. But I would say B2C is probably the biggest piece because they have a big challenge because they're dealing with so many different customers and they're dealing with data regulations, privacy laws that are coming in place. And the biggest piece that I see tough for marketers who are pulling together marketing automation is getting that data piece right for those consumers and bringing that data in a way that's actionable.
Yeah, and God knows there are issues with data privacy laws at the moment, mostly in Europe. Okay, so what are the lessons you may have learned from the most successful implementations that you've witnessed in the field?
Yeah, and I think marketing automation has evolved a lot in the last few years. But if you think about, 10, 15 years ago, you only needed 2 touch points to be able to get someone to come in to your brand and make a purchase or whatever the goal of your campaign is. But now you have 6 touch points is the average that you need to do in order to get that conversion. So it's totally a shift. And marketers are moving away from batch and blast type of messages and creating this more omni-channel approach that has this contextual, relevant one-on-one experience with, that was a lot of buzzwords, but those experiences that mean something to a customer. And when they do this right, the successful marketers who are implementing these campaigns, they're seeing they see $41 for every $1 spent on an email campaign that has dynamic content in it versus $21 to every dollar spent on emails that rarely deploy dynamic content. So it's 2 times increase in ROI by pulling in this more personalized approach that a lot of marketers have evolved into their marketing automation program. So we're seeing a huge shift to just rethinking what marketing automation means, right?
Yeah. It means being able to get in touch with these customers through all these different channels. And that's it, suddenly a challenge, isn't it?
Sure is. Do you want me to share a challenge?
Yes. That would be a good idea.
So, I think I've been in this space for a little under a decade now, and everyone has their unique challenges, right? They have certain industry challenges. But I would say the biggest one that, again, is the most common is going to be data. I saw a stat recently that said 27% of marketers say that data is the key obstacle to bringing a personalization into their campaigns. And so where I think that comes into play is not that they have a lack of data. There's a ton of data out there. It's kind of too much, a little scary. What I typically talk about is there's a way to bring data in and use it in a clever, not creepy way. I like to do the clever way. And a lot of that is, again, in the way you ingest that data to understand what data is actually actionable for you to use in your campaigns. It's going to give something back to the consumer. So putting that consumer first, understanding what data is going to build trust with them, and bringing back their business to be a loyal customer at the end of the day.
Anytime I talk to a vendor, as a consumer, I mean, it seems like they never know what my address is, even though I haven't moved for 17 years. And they always seem to ignore my telephone number. How come? How come is it possible nowadays, 2022?
Yeah. And we see a lot of brands making these transformations. Digital transformation is another big buzzword, but it's the fact that brands are realizing the benefits of getting your data right up front. So whenever we talk to marketers who are getting started in their digital transformation, we have them start to map out a goal. So the customers or the marketers who are doing this right are starting with a goal that is tied in some way, shape, or form to the overarching business objective. So that's step one. And goals could be a number of things. It could be driving a first purchase, reducing churn. Maybe it's very specific of increasing premium customer footprint and the revenue that they are bringing. So it can be a number of different goals. But once you have those identified, then you can start to think through what are those tactics or strategies to get me to where I can. To where I can complete those goals. So I would say get a goal first, then understand what data you need to support those goals and those strategies. So that's where I see the most successful marketing teams start off with.
Okay, crystal clear. Now we know a little bit more about the most successful implementations. What about the least successful ones? I mean, those that actually really got awry. Have you seen some really awful things in the field, I'm sure?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to call anybody out by name, but no, I think something, again, common that I think could resonate with a lot of people listening, it's not only getting your data right, but it's about team dynamics and priorities. Right. Like, I've seen a lot of teams that don't have the right team dynamics in place to operationalize this digital transformation. So what I mean by that, there's about 55% of marketers that say their time goes into execution across channels. So that's a big important piece of their job. But on the other side, 65% of marketers say that they spend a significant time on measuring and reporting. So the teams that are doing it right are having that balance between execution and measuring and reporting. So again, back to that goal piece, there's so many marketing automation programs that are just looking at engagement data or just looking at open rates. But if they don't have that goal in mind with those strategies in place, it's hard for them to understand, are they moving the needle? And they may just end up spending their whole time in execution mode, just keeping batch and blast emails like birthday and welcome campaigns in flight, but not optimizing to create tactics that are at that given time and place going to move the needle. Because as you know, things change all the time. We know found this out in the last 2 years, right? So the marketers who aren't constantly measuring and looking at the data that they do have is where they fail.
Right. Point well taken. How can marketing automation enable brands to deliver a consistent experience for each individual customer?
Yeah. I mean, not to go back to data again, but it is such a big component. I think it's worth speaking to this point on. A great example, just to put it in the lens of a real life retailer, for example. So Puma, big sportswear brand, they are across multiple countries, multiple languages that they're dealing with. And they were really just trying to, one, grow their database. So again, a lot of marketing teams struggle to grow their database with clean data that is collected in a consensual way that's giving a benefit back to the consumer. So they wanted to grow their database. And two, they wanted to have that complete view of the customer with that database, right? So what they did was really focus on bridging the gap between their different systems. So they had data both online, so their web data, their digital channels, and their offline systems. So maybe that's their storefronts. And they wanted to make sure that they identified who that person is, no matter where they are engaging with the customer, right? So when they were able to identify who these customers were across every digital touch point, they could then identify who those highly engaged segments are, right? And spend their time and effort on those campaigns for those highly engaged segments and not spend money and time and energy on those less engaged segments as often as they previously may have been. Mm-hmm. So that's a huge mental shift of segmenting your audience and sending relevant content based on different segments and different stages of their customer life cycle. And so they grew their database with Amarsys with over 50% in just 6 months. And then they ultimately increased their revenue. So back to that goal, ultimately we want to improve business outcomes, revenue being a big factor. They ultimately increased revenue by 25%, I believe, in email and web in just 6 months. So again, tying, that's why data and the business metrics are so hand in hand.
Yeah, it's very impressive. Do you have to ask permission to do this? Because you're in essence tracking people across different channels, are you? So do you have to ask permission before you do this?
Yeah, so there's tons of regulations out there, right? And so a lot of what marketers need to do to grow their database is they call it progressive profiling. So when you have these multiple channels that typically marketers are starting to bring into their portfolio. So whether it's your email, your web channels, as some people are getting into SMS or even chat apps like WeChat and Line and Facebook Messenger, or mobile apps for push notifications, things like that. All of these are different touch points to be able to identify where you like to opt in, where you like to get your communications, and use those channels that they are opted into to introduce them to maybe other channels or other ways for them to get involved. A loyalty promotion or loyalty program is a great example. So if you can use your existing channels that you do have opt-ins for, introduce these things like a loyalty program to be able to bring them in to a different channel that you may not have had them in before. So definitely an opt-in. It's definitely going to be a progressive profiling over time to understand how you can understand their needs and what channels they like to engage on over time.
And as a professional implementer of this kind of systems, do you see permission marketing as a driver or an inhibitor in these kind of projects?
You know, I think it's a driver because, yes, it's going to these rules and regulations prohibit you from doing certain things, right? But I think it's on purpose. It's from the lens of the putting yourself in the consumer lens. We're all consumers. If I give my data away, I want it to be used in a way that is beneficial for me. So I think all of these regulations, yes, they do make it harder for a marketer, but it helps in the long run for you to have more clean data anyways, so that you are spending your time on campaigns that actually are speaking to people who want to communicate with you.
Exactly. But I see and hear a lot of marketeers refraining from asking permission because they're afraid that a lot of people are going to turn them down. So what is the rate of acceptance from consumers whenever you ask them permission to do marketing with them?
Well, I think it depends on what channel. So there are some channels that are harder to opt out of than others. So for example, SMS, very easy to opt out of that channel. You literally just have to hit stop. So that channel is definitely one that needs a little bit more of a strategy if you're going to implement SMS. So when you start to build that, and it's more expensive. So those types of channels, yes, a lot more.
And it's very intrusive as well. So this is one of the reasons why people want to opt out as well.
Okay. Exactly. So if you are just blasting them with a message that's not relevant to them, and they aren't good deals or they aren't meaningful to the consumer, they're going to opt out. So a very high opt out rate in SMS if you don't do it right and have that personalized piece. However, like web channel is a great example of how you can collect information. So there are tools out there that where you have your browsing history on your web pages. That information can be used. So once you identify yourself as a user, so you set up an account with a brand on a website, for instance, that can then be used to create a very contextually relevant experience for you. So as you're going to the search bar and searching for shoe brands, we may know that you like this particular product affinity. So we will show those types of products in the search bar up front. So there's a lot of ways to optimize things like your website to try to keep the customer engaged for as long as possible using the information that you do have a customer previously might have been anonymous data that you could have pulled in now that they are a known customer.
Okay. So we've seen how you deliver a consistent experience for each individual customer and what you have to do this. What are the inhibitors, technical or organizational, that are preventing brands from implementing marketing automation properly?
Well, data, obviously. But I think from the organizational perspective is another key player. So over the years, we've started to see this new role evolve. I'm sure you've seen it, like the customer experience role. And so if there are still brands that don't have this role. So I would say that's a big inhibitor or thing that's holding brands back from creating these sophisticated, very relevant one-to-one experiences. And the reason why this is such an important role is because they're channel agnostic. So if this role is only going to succeed if they don't have like a number tied to a specific channel. So they mm-hmm. have the end goal of the customer in mind the entire time to essentially quarterback each of these channel teams to be talking to each other. So for example, I had a marketer that was at a large company. They dealt with 13 different brands. So very global company, a lot going on. And so she was a digital marketer, had been in the space for a long time. And she hadn't seen this company she worked for start to bridge the gap between other departments, right? So she just started to raise her hand and join the services team, all hands calls or their team calls on a monthly basis, mm-hmm. just to start to identify maybe some pain points that they're having that her digital marketing team could possibly implement. And what she found was there was a little bit of overlap to where mm-hmm. we can bring that in. So that just was the beginning of how they can evolve a customer experience role that spans across multiple departments, multiple channels, to have that holistic view.
Yeah, and that's not always very easy in large companies, is it? I mean, I've run into this problem myself when I was on the other side of the fence, and it's not always allowed to touch the customer database when some people are sitting on it and they sort of own it because they are from a different department or a different part of the business or different business unit. And it's not always easy to break down the silos, as they say.
And that's another big buzzword, breaking down the silos. But and I think in the end of the day, as much as you can get your data in an infrastructure that sets you up to not be able to not have to change it a lot. So if you have that up front and have less reliance on, let's say, an IT or another department that you don't control, if you have that data in a way that's set up to be able to be more flexible and agile in the way that you go to market with your campaigns, mm-hmm. can take a little bit of that load off. And you make a very valid point, and I think it's a lot of marketers sometimes can't do the cool, flashy campaigns that they want to do because they have that holding them back. And I've seen a stat that said 58% of MarTech tools in general, like not even a specific one, like in general, are 58% of these MarTech tools are being used to their full potential. And that's been flat since 2019. So that tells me that MarTech platforms are sometimes innovating a little bit ahead of where marketers want to be, and because they're held back by some of those pieces. So as much as these tools can help you to hold that data in a way that's easy to adjust and easy to build new sophisticated campaigns from, will hopefully remove some of those pain points. But that is a huge pain we've seen.
That's a fascinating insight you have here. And maybe some of these platforms, I mean, once again, all of them included, have so much functionality in them that maybe it's a good idea to just use some of the functionality well rather than try to do it all and badly because you're for some organizational reasons you can't or you're not allowed to.
Exactly.
Okay. Good. Fascinating. How can you help brands easily measure and optimize the results of their campaigns with marketing automation?
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing here, well, marketing automation at its core, right? The beauty of it is that as you're running these campaigns, you're going to get a lot of information back. So if you are able to take this information and make that actionable, that is the key to optimizing your campaigns and testing and learning them. So what we just talked about earlier, if marketers can not let data be a preventer of getting something out the door, to just get a couple done. So like a lot of brands that I see, just get a couple of those goals. So we talked about goals at the beginning. Just start with two or three. you don't have, we understand you have a lot of goals. Everyone does. But if you start off with your 2 to 3 goals you want to do, run some automated marketing campaigns on these specific goals. That just gets you in the door to not only test and learn, but you're proving to the business that this is working or not. And that something needs, that we either need more investment or we need more buy-in from other teams potentially. So the more that you start to run, the more you'll understand. And as much as you can tie that to that business objective I talked about earlier, that's going to make you look better as a marketer, maybe some job promotion, but also show that you're impacting the overarching business. So I would say, one, you're going to get a ton of stuff. Make sure you're looking at it. But two, this is something that happens a lot, is sometimes marketers only focus on the good metrics. I'm guilty of that too, but sometimes we have to be, put our big girl pants on and show that there are maybe some areas that are not doing so hot and not performing well, or maybe campaigns that have failed. But if you don't have these campaigns that fail, how are you going to learn from it? So it's about identifying the gaps as well as the opportunities for increased revenue, both current and future opportunities down the road. So I would say those are kind of the biggest pieces that I, that I see.
I like this idea of just picking up a few goals and not trying to achieve too many at the same time. It's a step-by-step approach, very pragmatic.
Yeah.
I'd like to wrap up this interview because I see you have a lot of experience in that field. So what is your vision of marketing automation? It's been around for a little bit more than 10 years now, and it's suddenly maturing quite a lot. And so this is evolving as well. So where do you see it heading in the future?
I see there's a ton, like I said, there's a ton of innovation out there where a lot of marketers are playing catch up. But the marketers who are taking advantage of this innovation, we're already starting to see some really, really cool things, and that's only going to continue. So great example, it's just identifying the difference between multi-channel campaigns and omni-channel campaigns. I think at the future and where people are looking to get is this omni-channel experience, but sometimes they're stuck in this multi-channel piece. So multi-channel would mean, let's say I see an ad for this cute dress and I purchase it, it's amazing, and maybe a day or two later I get a push notification or an email that's asking me to purchase the same dress I just bought. So that's a disconnected experience. So good job to the marketer for being cross-channel in a different multi-channel experience. Great. But that next future investment in area that I think will be really, really cool once we get there is having that contextual experience built in to maybe give me recommendations on shoes that were fit with the dress, and being able to connect your purchase data, your loyalty status data, your intent data, your browsing behavior, like all of these different data points that can help brands be able to predict where I want to go without predicting ahead of me where I want to go. That I may not even know I want to go there, but maybe I do want to get new shoes. Maybe my old ones do not do it justice for this dress. So I would say omni-channel is huge. And then I think from like a retail perspective, or anyone who has an offline experience, so like a storefront, this has evolved to where as customers spend less time in stores and moving more to this online presence, right? We want to maximize everything we can out of those experiences in store. So you know, a lot of brands out there, like entertainment brands, for example, are trying to get people to come into their experience. But usually it's for, let's say, a birthday or a celebration. How could they continue to bring them back in creative ways beyond once a year on their birthday? So it's kind of cool to see some of these companies and these marketing teams creating cool ideas like half birthdays, or being very contextual in the retention tactics to bring people into a loyal, to be a loyal consumer. So I think the world of loyalty, the world of retention is a huge piece of the puzzle that I think hasn't been completely tackled yet by the vast amount of marketers. But I hope that we get there because more of these companies are going to come up with more and more products, and more things are going to be coming at us, and we can make a bazillion decisions. And how are we going to make sure that we have brands that are benefiting both us from a values perspective as well as from a product perspective? So future omnichannel, we're getting there, starting with a lot of cross-channel experiences, but I think we want to get to that omnichannel place.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Megan.
You've been listening to the Visionary Marketing Podcast. We hope this piece has been useful to you. Don't forget to give us a good rating on whichever platform you use. And we hope to see you soon on the Visionary Marketing Podcast channel.